Well, nice for allowing me to be here in this beautiful place. All right, so let's see. This, as I said, the title is kind of almost like a tongue twist. This is a subgroup type. What do I mean by subgroup type? Subtype that. Well, that's quite simple. I mean, the original thing. So you just take, say, H and G finite groups. Acting either on type 2 1 factor. And so then of course we get subfactor. MGMH. So that is what I call a subgroup type subfactor. Alright, so of course this is what I would call a subgroup subfactor. So what would be a subgroup type subfactor? That's just essentially you generalize this to tensor categories. So you replace sort of the representation links of G and H by some sort of abstract tensor categories where you have some kind of inclusion thing and then you try to play the same game for that. So that's all. So what I want to do, I want to discuss some examples. First I just do all this, a little bit of this categorical nonsense stuff. Then I do some examples. And then I see how an approach to this to subfactors related to twisted Kac-Moody algebra. Now I should warn and say that this is still very much work in progress, so I think But I sort of couldn't resist because the combinatorics of this stuff is all quite well known and it's quite nice, so I will just tell you about this, even though at this point certainly I cannot give you approval about the existence of such subfactors, and I'll give some evidence why they should exist and how one can get them. So that's alright. Okay, so let's first do this tensor category stuff. Well, okay, so let me first give examples. I'm not going to do all these actions because I would never get finished. So essentially, if you think of the following, we want to have a general structure which involves both the notion of the representation ring of a finite group, say here, and two would be, say, if you have N and M finite depths, sub finite index, then we get the category we could take. Consider the category generated by of n bimodules. Generated by, say, n. Of course, with respect to the relative tensor product with respect to n. No, I don't need finite depth, that's right, but. Because what I consider here only is just, at the end I always want to have a tensor category with finitely many irreducible objects. But of course, I don't need a finite group either. So I mean, for defining tensor categories. Alright, and of course you can play the same game. You can also consider the MM bimodules, that's also a tensor category. So essentially you should think of a tensor category as just some general framework for which these are two examples, and the game is essentially just you don't worry about what the objects are. That's just, they essentially will be just reduced to some labeling set, and all the information lies in the morphisms. So essentially, you just express everything by arrows and morphisms. So that's essentially what it is. So let me just write down a few axioms about this. So. Okay, so what I want here is, in general, what I did here is C should be a C star, and let's say finite, also I will not C star tensor category. So what are some of these properties here? So we have some axioms or some properties. Again, if you are not familiar, just think of things like that here. So one of them is for the C star property, that means that if X, Y objects, then it's for also HOM X, Y are Hilbert spaces. Then, and then a finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, and X, the C star algebra. So that would sort of take care of the C star part. What about the tensor part? So we have a functor. So what does this mean? Essentially, we get canonical inclusions. From X1, Y1, tensor. Now here this is the normal tensor part over C. So let me enter HOM. And now here this is kind of the abstract tensor product. So essentially, you assign sort of vector Hilbert spaces to each of those guys, and there are some rules which define your embeddings into this stuff. And of course, it should satisfy various axioms, associativity axioms, and things like that. And I'm not going to worry about those things. And what else do we have? That's just a natural trace function. On n x, for all x, and also the star operation here for n x should be compatible with the tensor product. Anyway, all these natural things. So basically, that you can do whatever you can do for this thing here. So what's the point of all of this? If one has such a thing, let me see. Maybe also x irreducible. If and only if and x. Well, that's just the definition for irreducible. Then, okay. So if one has such a thing, then one has a nice consequence is the following. So if you have x as an object of C, then we get always automatically a subvector by just doing the following commuting square. So how can we get this? So we get always, finite just means finitely many irreducible objects. So that's... Okay, so then you play this game of your tensor one, and then essentially when you tensor to the left and to the right, and you get a commuting square. So that's essentially, let me see. I have on your tensor here at the to the right. Like this. So this is commuting square. Yes, it should be finite dimensional. So I also assume that all the home spaces are finite dimensional. So, well, maybe one could develop a theory with non-finite, but I'm not going to do this here. All right, so you get this. So you get the commuting square versus from this machine, and then of course you let n go to infinity, and then you get the subfactor. And so we get from this. And in N with index would be, what is it, dim x square, where the dimension is given by this natural trace function, by just taking the trace of the identity morphism of this guy here. So that's, yes. Yes. But I mean, in this case, it's, you know, this is finite thing, so that's fairly easy there. I mean, we all have finite many, so you get essentially something called periodic Bartle diagram. So in this setting, it's fairly easy. But
always effective, or any finite?
Well, okay. I mean, maybe if you take the trivial object, you wouldn't get anything. You would just get one. But as long as this is something non-trivial, then you would get some factor, because essentially the thing would have you get an AF algebra with periodic Bartle diagram, and so there's so then that's just one trace. So all right, so that's fine, and. Also, I mean, relative commutants can be easily calculated from the tensor product rules, etc. So this is a nice game. Now, of course, the question is, can we get? It's always suspicious if one has something as nice like this, which produces lots of nice things. It would seem like all the difficulties are hidden in the axioms. You just make enough assumption, and then you can produce something very nice, and that's it. And of course, It's not that one has to work somewhere to get nice examples. So what about examples? So those examples are they do satisfy the thing, but of course in some sense if you want to construct subfactors, this is circular. And the finite group is not that exciting. So one can get the following, the so-called fusion categories. So they exist. So the thing which was inspired from some physics stuff, they exist C star tensor categories of this type I have in mind, which is sort of outlined for each simple. The algebra G, and each positive integer K, and I think there's some. One has to be. So I make some assumption. Think if one takes this some non-simple lace, then maybe K has to be divisible by some number. It's usually like 2, but. But I think I will not need this here now. So let's see examples. That's a little bit abstract. So what about, for instance, for SL2? So this would have, this of course it corresponds to the Jones subfractors. So we have objects 1, 2, 0, up to K. And what are the tensor product rules? So this would be the simple objects labeled by this numbers, and then K tensor product by object one is given by okay, let me this picture here. It just means if you tensor any object by this thing, you just take the two neighbors. It will be the direct sum of the two neighbors. So, and of course, if you are at the end of this thing, then it's only the neighbor to the right, and here it's only the neighbor to the left. So that would be it's given by this. And then, of course, the subvector corresponding to 1 would be shown subvector of index 4 cos squared pi over k plus 4. So that's... Now we need another one, so that's... I think I have it down here again. And so for SF3, okay, I put it in the hat because it somehow because I was thinking of the Kac-Moody algebras, but you need not worry about the hat there. So for SO3, if k equals 4, then essentially you just arrange them in a triangle of side length 4, and so this will be the irreducible objects are labeled by these points in this triangle, and the tensor product rule, if you're going to use this graph thing, is just given by. This is tensoring by 1, where 1 would be this guy here. So this would be, this by down here, it typically corresponds to the trivial object, trivial representation. You tensor by this thing. And again, the rule is if you get out of this triangle, then you just ignore the guy. So that would be tensor product rules. And here, then, we'll get Hecke algebra subvector. Of index, what is it? Sine squared 3 pi over k plus 3 divided by, anyway, it doesn't really matter. Okay, so this would be examples and some remark. So these are labeled by usually this construction can be done by quantum groups. And as groups of unitors or by loop groups. This was done by Anthony Wasserman. Now, so loop groups essentially, and of course the Lie algebras of the loop groups correspond to Kac-Moody algebras. So. Okay, then another remark is just following this. It's just, so we have seen this, is it still there? Yes. So we have seen, if you have a subvector, then we automatically get a tensor category. And here, now we have a tensor category, and we start, and we get a subvector. So how are these two guys related? And so usually, the tensor category we get from the constructed subvector will not be the same as the other one. It will just be a sub-tensor category. Is subcategory of generating category. So for instance, in the SF2 case, this would just correspond to the evil points. And in the SF3 case, it would be corresponding to the spots here, which are kind of, yeah, maybe that was not so small, to the circles here. So this is about every, about one third of the points. Yeah, this is, so we usually only get a subcategory here. So this guy, and so on, so. Alright. No, it's not the same because I think it's not, in some cases it's the whole thing. So yeah. For instance, I think if you take the E8 subvector, I mean, with E8 mean from the algebra E8. And I think for S, if you take the SOC subvector, so then you would also get it. So it's, right, so for instance, if you, yeah, okay, but, so in some cases it is the same. Yeah, so for instance, it is, I mean, you can always find an object that it is actually the same, but then it may not be, it may be a reducible one. So it's, I mean, now this case, this usually leads to the fact if you have C prime is a proper thing of this, this leads to all kinds of orbital phenomena if you go to asymptotic inclusion, stuff like that. So, but I am not going to go to this. Okay, so yeah, so maybe okay. One more little thing is about model categories. Okay, let's start. So we now what you've seen here. Okay, I'm just going to erase it. So far, the tensor category would only take care of NN and MN bimodules. So what about NM and MN bimodules? We cannot tensor an M to an M bimodules, but that's very easy to deal with. So we just define a module category. And I think maybe I just give you the example and I won't bother about asymptotics. So, bother about axiomatics. So I mean, it's just essentially you observe if you have an MX and MN bimodule can be tensored by NN bimodules from the right. So hence, if you call this your C, then hence, from this we follow that the MN bimodules are a whatever right module category of C. Okay, so that's all. And so in sense, again, I think you can action by the thing, you can find a definition of a module category. It's just, again, you define it via functors. You have some you can formally define what a right module tensor category is. So I think I skip this of a module category. As I wouldn't give the whole definition anyway. I think it should be intuitively clear. You just have something. You have a tensor category. You have something else, and you have some rules. Essentially, you just have some functor. So M. Module category over C if there exists some functor M from M cross C into M with nice properties. Okay.
So axiomatize that from M star and M you go to
M star.
But
yeah. No, I think I'm okay. There should be some quantum stuff. No, I don't think I need the quantum gradient stuff here necessarily. But I'm not. Again, here in this final. So essentially, what I want is the following. again. Okay, let me just say what I want then. Again, I mean, in some sense, now we have used this tensor category to get commuting squares, to get subvectors, but we cannot get all subvectors just having a tensor category. But what I want is the following. Say if we have an object A, in object M, and say X in object in C, then what I want is I want to get commuting squares. Squares of N. So let's see, N C X tensor N embedded in N C A. I'm sorry, this would be now M A tensor X tensor N. Yeah, and then again I want to go N go to infinity. So essentially I'm interested in having a machine which produces commuting squares. And that's all I need. What I need is that this embedding here produces commuting squares. That's all over there. Alright. So again, so I don't really want to dwell too much on this axiomatic stuff because I would like to get to some examples. This usual thing, one can define all kinds of things and prove theorems, but as long as one doesn't have examples, then, or if the only example is just the example which already gets from a subvector, then this is not terribly exciting. So let me give you one which is not so exciting either, but I think it's an instructive example. Is the following. So say we take for C, just wrap G. So can we get a non-trivial module category of this thing? Now the answer is of course, well, yes, one can do this. For instance, if we have a subgroup, so let H be a subgroup. Now, of course, if you take a representation of H, then this is not really a module category because it's an H module, a G. So how can we fix this? So let's say W is in rep H. So we can attain, so of course, then the trick is, of course, we induce up to int W, which, of course, now is an object in C. But then, of course, that's not so great because if you have here an irreducible object, then here you get something reducible. So we would like to preserve the structure of this thing. So how can we do this? Now, of course, W, int W, is as a vector space, is isomorphic to, the functions of G mod H, tensor W, as a vector space. And so hence, it follows that int W is an A, which is just an F of GH. So it's a module of this one because we can multiply these functions the usual way. And of course it's also a G module, so general G module. And now this preserves irreducibility. Okay, so hence that we have, if W irreducible, H module is and only if int W is irreducible C module. Irreducible A module. But now, via this thing, so now we get that the A modules form a module category over C. So now, if we now play this game here with a subfactor, so what kind of subfactor do we get? everything. So what you do now, so you take this. This, of course, so an A module is in particular a G module, so we can tensor with G modules. And so we get, yeah, we can play this game over there. And so we get subfactor of index dim W squared times G mod H. And if W is the trivial representation, then it's always we get the fixed point factor, so M G M H. So okay. So now why did I go through this example? I mean, this is something which I learned from Anthony Wasserman, and when he had this approach of finding quantum subgroups of quantum SI2, which is so, and this was inspired by considering vertex algebras. So maybe I should just make a remark that this approach can be used also in the categorical setting. So, to remark. So for instance, from this one can get what in Ognano notation would be quantum subgroups of UQSL2, which of course correspond to the ADE subvector classification for index less than 4. And so, as I said, so the algebraic part, then it was written up by Kirillov, Junior, and Ostrick. And then who wrote up the paper and at least did the algebraic part for this. Okay, so essentially the problem is you have to find an analog of this A here in this categorical setting. And this was done essentially by some just try and error combinatoric stuff in this case. So, all right. Well, let me see. So as I said before, what we wanted to do, we would like to find some generalization of the subgroup construction. So the question is, can we find other examples? Now, one is the following. So we have a generalization of the subgroup of G, embedding in G cross G, say S times. This was found by Julian Ehrlichman. And in the brace setting, I think it was actually started out here in Fieser, and then George asked some question about some brace representations. I mean, okay, at that time this was not really in the categorical setting. It was just for braid representations, but then I think then in a paper with myself, we sort of reformulated this in the categorical setting and calculated relative commutants, etc., of these things. And also I think Marta has added, and she generalized this to not just braiding, but also this for some more general categories, which have some Young-Baxter type conditions. So in this case, one can also define some embedding of some category C into C. Okay, the embedding here is of course diagonal embedding. So, okay, so, all right, so this is about the tensor character stuff. Now, another tempting thing would be the following. Of course, one knows, for instance, SL3 contains a subgroup SL3. So that would be tensor. So of course, SL3 is a subgroup of SU3. Which of course wouldn't define the finiteness condition, but question is, could we perhaps do the same thing on the quantum level? And the problem is that doesn't really work, at least not in a naive way, because one cannot embed the corresponding quantum groups. So that doesn't work in a thing. And so in that sense, at least certainly I didn't really want to think more about this thing because it seemed to be too hard. Okay, now let's get to the second part of the cuts, twisted Katsumuriya thing, and then see that somehow it seems to be, if one try to do something along these lines, the correct setting how to try to do this thing is would be what to do is told us by the representation theory of the Afanka Katsumuriya, I suppose, a twisted one. So let me now go to the second part. Now, I use here the Lie algebra notion probably as poorest one should take the loop rule notation, but I mean, as far at this point, we are mostly just interested in the combinatorics, and then it's slightly easier to do this in the Lie algebra notation. So, let's see, how much time do I have until 50? 50 minutes, okay. So, alright, so let's Katsumuriya algebra. So first the untwisted is, of course, just you take G, semi-simple Lie algebra. Then the corresponding affine Katsumuriya algebras, is given by the universal analog of the algebra of G, given by the Laurent polynomials, plus some it's a central extension of this, so this is a central element, plus another element which will not be important for our context. And the computational relations are x tangent t to the m, y tangent t to the m, equals x, y tangent t to the m plus m. Plus, now if the indices add up to zero, so then we have to take the something like this. That's the commutation relation. Now the representation theory is well known. So we have a representation is called, we have a level K representation. If the central element, now in an irreducible representation, the central element always has to act via scalar. And also, if this is a nice representation, that means an integrable representation, the scalar has to be a positive integer. So, if C acts via K times the identity on the representation. So the level K representations are classified, and they are only for a given level. There are only finitely many irreducible level K representations, and they are given by exactly the same picture as over there. So I think that in this case, I'm not going to give formal definitions. So finitely many, so for S of 3 would be given by this picture, for S of 2 level K would be given by that thing here. And indeed, so one way of constructing now this tensor calculus was just to define a tensor product between those representations which will preserve the level. And this is the very hard part of this whole theorem. So one gets nice examples. So now the next thing would be, so this has been done, so yeah, maybe the twisted ones also give us nice examples. So now, look at the twisted. So how does one get twisted ones? So you take a... So you take an outer automorphism, like alpha be an outer automorphism of G. Now, in some sense, there are not that many. So essentially, now we will only be interested in G, say, equals S of N. Essentially, there is only alpha would be net X to negative X transposed. Now, on the group level, that would just correspond to to the automorphism. If you have a matrix G, you map it to G inverse transposed, which is a good automorphism. And of course, then it's also clear what's the fixed point algebra. Equals FLN, which I think you see in the group level, by the way. So in general, we always consider the order of alpha equals 2, which is actually the case in all but one case. So and certainly it's the case here. So hence that gives us that G can be written as G0 plus G1, which are the eigenspaces for 1 and negative 1, like this. So then what's the what's now the twisted one? This is just consists of all your own polynomials, x, j, hence a key to the j. Again, then we have plus alpha c plus beta d. And well, the point is the following, where x, j is in g, j mod 2. Yeah, so that means the even coefficients are all in g0, and the odd ones are all in g1. And because alpha is an automorphism, you check easily, this is again closed under the bracket operation. So that's it. So next we need the representation theory of this. So now this can be quite easily reduced from the untwisted one, at least the combinatorics. So the representations, so first observe that alpha induces permutation of irreducible representation of G. Here you test perturb the representation by alpha. So what's, and of course, what would this be? Would it be permutation of index 2? So in our case, essentially it just maps in the SLN case the representation to its dual representation, which means in this picture we just reflect a reflection on the y-axis. So that's alpha maps this representation to that one if you perturb it. And so then once I set the irreducible representation with the irret of the twisted of G hat twisted or just and say of level K are just all the alpha invariant irret of T hat untwisted at level K. So that means in our case, these are the representations which lie on this line, so we have three representations here. No, this is a completely different game. So it's nothing to do with orbifold. So then one can also observe the following. So essentially, this representations of the alpha invariant representations of SU3 or SUN correspond to sort of the representations of. Well, I think that's not surprising considering that what's the fixed point algebra of SON. So in some sense, that would suggest that the fixed point on this thing would give us sort of our quantum subgroup on this thing, which that would give us the embedding. But let's just, I think I jumped ahead a little bit. The first thing would be the following, that I would accept them, that can we also make those guys into tensor category? Now, and it turns out that even though it looks like it was SF3, if you actually want to define a fusion tensor product for these twisted ones, it doesn't work. And I think the first time I read about this was some thesis from Robert Varel, which was a student of Anthony Wasserman, who I think Anthony asked him to try to construct fusion in the twisted case, and it just turned out it's not possible. And essentially, for those who they couldn't find a vacuum representation which is necessary for this thing. So this is not possible. 2D fine fusion for twisted representations. Okay, so that's not so good. But on the other hand, so that's sort of bad news. Good news is, if I look again in all kinds of physics papers and boundary conformal field theory and various things, for some reason, I also think you have come to the conclusion that one cannot define a fusion for the twisted ones. However, that's whatever physics, whatever suggests. And I think also that's what also I think already Robert in his thesis suggested what we should try to do is that if one tensor is a twisted, tensor untwisted, then again one gets a twisted representation. So that means view the twisted representations as modules over untwisted. And so that's essentially the reason why I went through this stuff before with the module category. So that's I do. Then I think I think I mostly have Gannon and Gabriel. They did lots of calculations about this thing, and I think also I think others like I think Detgover, Zuber, maybe also Fuchs-Schweiger, and probably others. So they did calculations and. Which sort of trying to find out what the fusion coefficients were for this tensor category thing. So and I think it's done implicitly or maybe even explicitly. Yeah, I think even a fairly explicitly state. Let me maybe just very quickly wrap this up. So at least on combinatorial level, this fusion coefficient for in this case corresponds to. Some sort of subgroup scheme. Well, scheme not in the mathematical sense, just a pattern maybe. Pattern. And essentially, they can be obtained by what I like call just quantum restriction rules. From S from S U K down to S S well, sorry S U N K down to S O N K. So one can do calculations and let me just do at least one example. So what about for this particular example here? I mean that doesn't seem to be that hard. So we have three twisted representations. And it turns out, I think, one actually should not consider the whole category, but only those categories C prime, which are called. So only those sort of, not the crosses and the thick points, but the circle points. So if I'm doing the calculation, then would get induction restriction graph restriction graph Now for this case, okay, so we have three. Let me see, are they up or down? I mean, not that it would matter. So we have, so this would be the twisted ones, and the untwisted ones are down here. Of course, now I spoiled my pun, but anyway. So, and what's the inclusion pattern? It's just, yeah, okay, so we'll get a graph like this. Originally, I was thinking maybe I would leave out a point which would make it more exciting if one obtained a graph like this. I mean, it would say that it's the end of the story, but okay, so this is going to be 8, so at least that would suggest that things should exist. Now, of course, I mean, this would be a rather, if you only could get the D8 graph, it would be a rather complicated way of getting this thing. And I don't know if you want, the next complicated graph would be already be somewhat, yeah, okay, maybe I do quickly do that. So if you take level 6, then already it gets pretty wild, so I don't know. I think maybe quickly. This is probably, there may be some edges missing, but just to give you a sort of a flavor of this game. So now here we have a 3 symmetry because it corresponds to some 9th rule of unity. And then here we go, and I get, anyway, I think there's also here another point, a point here. So, okay, anyway, someone certainly can get quite wild stuff to do this thing. All right, so this is, now, okay, so we have done combinatorics, so how could one prove this? Well, okay, at this point, I don't have a proof. I mean, the existence would be one, it's just one thing which doesn't sound as bad as unfortunately it is, just one could be constructed if one can find, I mean, everything is there except of course the commuting square condition, which of course is where the problem is. If one can find commuting squares for here the happy algebra Hn into Hm plus 1, and here Dn plus 1, where this has the Bartley diagram of Brauer algebra, or rather of some quotient of it. At least in certain cases where, I mean, which, like SUN and Auden level or even something like that. So, but I think if doing this by brute force method somehow doesn't look very, except maybe for easy cases, doesn't seem so easy. So I think that the more promising thing is the following, trying to follow the indication where they gave you for finite groups before, where we had this algebra A, and this A modules. So probably better, some more conceptual approach. S for H in T case, where you the problem is here, you need to find replacement for A, which is what this was F T or H G in a quantum group setting. Now there should be some hope because, for instance, this odd automorphism alpha sort of translates into the quantum group setting, even though it doesn't have a nice sharp fixed point algebra. So there may be some hope that this can be done. But I think I don't want to speculate too much, and I'm already over the time anyway. Okay, thanks. No, I mean, one could write, unfortunately, I mean, I was thinking of writing down explicit forms which can be done, but I didn't find it in terms of some coefficient of S matrices. So it's, well, essentially, okay, so the indices would essentially be, it's sort of like in the subgroup case, you know, where the index was just the dimension of X squared times G mod H. Now, what would this be in the categorical setting? So that would, of course, be here, the categorical dimension of this object X, and G mod H would just be sort of like the sum of D lambda squared for in SU3. Here is sum of D mu squared for SO3K. So it would be something like that. That would be the indices. So I mean, if you want to get small indices, this probably is not what you should try, because I think in some sense you could think of it as just, I think it would correspond philosophically speaking to some kind of good Mandela-Hopf type subfactors. So. And yes, and I mean, these numbers can also sort of known. There exist some formulas using S matrices, and one can actually find quite. I think some powerful terms in terms of signs and some square roots. So it could be. Yeah, basically. You know, that's in some way of thinking that you do a GHT interaction replacing temporal Lie algebra by Hecke algebra, which doesn't sound as hard. It wouldn't sound so hard, but it somehow, if you try to do it in a naive way, I mean, it's pretty soon, it seems to be very difficult, so, but, okay.